By then there were enough troopers present to form a little circle of listeners. Curtis looked around at them, knowing he might spend the next 6 months or so tagged the Earthquake Kid on radio calls, but too jazzed to care. He said that while Ennis was in the gas station office questioning Bradley Roach, he himself had been sitting behind that strange, oversized steering wheel, still being careful not to touch anything except with the sides of his hands. And as he sat there, he started to hear a humming sound, very high. He told them he had felt it as well. It came out of nowhere, this high, steady hum. I could feel it buzzing in my fillings. I think if it had been much stronger, it would have actually jingled the change in my pocket. There's a word for that. We learned it in physics, I think, but I can't, for the life of me, remember what it is. A harmonic, Tony said. That's when two things start to vibrate together, like tuning forks or wine glasses. Curtis was nodding. Yeah, that's it. I don't know what could be causing it, but it's very powerful. It seemed to settle right in the middle of my head, the way the sound of the power lines up on the bluff does when you're standing right underneath them. This is going to sound crazy, but after a minute or so, that hum almost sounded like talking.
I laid a girl up there on the bluffs once, Arky said sentimentally, sounding more like Lawrence Welk than ever. And it was pretty harmonic, all right. Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Save it for your memoirs, bub, Tony said. Go on, Curtis. I thought at first it was the radio, Kurt said, because it sounded a little bit like that, too, an old vacuum tube radio that's on and tuned to music coming from a long way off. So I took my hanky and reached over to kill the power. That's when I found out the knobs don't move. Either of them. It's no more a real radio than, than Phil Candleton's a real state trooper.
That's funny, kid, Phil said. At least as funny as a rubber chicken, I guess. Or,
shut up, I want to hear this, Tony said. Go on, Curtis, and leave out the comedy.
Yes, sir.
By the time I tried the radio knobs, I realized it was cold in there. It's a warm day. The car was sitting in the sun, but it was cold inside. Sort of clammy, too. That's when I thought of the show about earthquakes. Kurt shook his head slowly back and forth. I got a feeling that I should get out of that car, and fast. Now, by then, the hum was quieting down, but it was colder than ever, like an icebox. Tony Shaindinks, then Troop D Sergeant Commanding, walked over to the Buick. He didn't touch it. Just leaned in the window. He stayed like that for the best part of a minute, leaning into the dark blue car, back inclined but perfectly straight, hands clasped behind his back. Ennis stood behind him. The rest of the troopers clustered around Curtis, waiting for Tony to finish with whatever it was he was doing. For most of them, Tony Shaindinks was the best SC they'd ever have while wearing the Pennsylvania gray. He was tough, brave, fair-minded, crafty when he had to be. By the time a trooper reached the rank of sergeant commanding, the politics kicked in. The monthly meetings, the calls from Scranton. Sergeant commanding was a long way from the top of the ladder, but it was high enough for the bureaucratic bullshit to hit high gear. Shaindinks played the game well enough to keep his seat, but he knew, and his men knew, he'd never rise higher. Or want to. Because with Tony, his men always came first. And when Shirley replaced Matt Babicki, it was his men and his woman. His troop, in other words. Troop D. They knew this not because he said anything, but because he walked the walk.